All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday evening, March 14th. I'm your wonderful host, PK. I'll be with you for the next hour. We'll be talking about a libertarian take on things. For you who are not too familiar with this show, I represent the libertarian view. Well, I don't represent the Libertarian Party. I mean, represent my version of the libertarian view, which is pretty much the mainstream way that it's delivered, I guess, with sort of my take on things. Everything I say is not, you know, diehard libertarianism, but it's very close, of course, with my, you know, my take on things. Appreciate you for listening. I welcome your calls and questions. I welcome debate. I'm still waiting to debate because I have some of those skills with my propensity for sarcasm and my good and bad and tasteless humor. That's always on the back burner. And on this show, there is no censorship. There is no political correctness. I reject the following terms as the status quo's way of trying to silence debate, dissent, and inquiry. I totally value the Western tradition of free inquiry, and I will not be shut down, intimidated, or censored by these following terms, which are cowardly used by the status quo all the time. I won't be cowed by racism, these terms, racism, anti-Semitism, conspiracy theory, anti-American, unpatriotic. Those are words that are thrown around by the establishment opinion cartel towards anything that doesn't fit with their interpretation of what's good for the empire. And by the empire, I mean the status quo establishment in Washington, D.C., with its over 700 military bases in over 140 countries, all contrary to the Constitution and limited government. And that's why I keep sort of laughing at the Tea Party, although they're starting to get a few fangs. I mean, in the ones that are in Congress now are starting to stand up to the regular rank-and-file Republicans who continue to be big spenders. And I knew that would happen anyway. I'm not saying I told you so. I'm just saying I knew that would happen because they turn into their old ways of big spending. So hopefully these upstart Tea Party Republicans will, you know, hold their feet to the fire, and they should never raise the debt ceiling. That's like, you know, that's like giving the heroin addict more heroin. It's like giving the alcoholic more whiskey, more six packs, if they'll only change their ways sometime down the future. So those cuts have to be made now. And I wisely suggest that they end the drug war immediately and all its prison, imprisoning all these innocent people for supposed drug crimes, all the asset forfeitures. Okay, end the drug war. Bring all the troops home from the bases in Western Europe, Britain, Spain, Italy, you know, South Korea, Japan, defending our rich allies. Bring all those troops home. And then, of course, declare victory in Iraq and Afghanistan. Hey, everyone, we won. Bring all the troops home. Let's save some money. Let's defend this country. Let's not put expensive missile defense systems in Western Europe to irritate the Russians. There's no need for that. If we have a missile defense system here in our own country, that's fine. Let's embark, should I say re-embark, for constitutional limited government. Let's restore our republic. Let's end this empire. And let's focus on liberty, property, and peace with a foreign policy of armed neutrality. So tonight, we're going to talk about holistic medicine, something that I've been concerned with for over 30 years. In fact, I've collected a lot of alternative cancer information for over 30 years. I have files of it in a Foot Locker. Actually, a lot of it came from articles I found in Penthouse. That's where I heard about the great Dr. Brzezinski, who is a Houston cancer treatment doctor who's been continually harassed by the you know, the government medical complex, the I'm sure the AMA, FDA, because he was treating cancers. As I recall, 30 or some years ago, reading that he was using normal amounts of some small amounts of normal urine as antibodies. So, I mean, I'm totally, since I believe in the free market, I certainly believe in a free market in medicine and holistic medicine, and I'm totally against any harassment or obstacles to people and practitioners of holistic medicine. It's also referred to as alternative medicine. I don't think my guest who's coming on cares for that term, but I like alternative medicine. I don't think it is something as fly by night. I think of it as sort of in the same school as holistic. I myself have been a big fan of chiropractic for over 30 years. I'm very into the, I like exercise, nutrition, and I'm very strong I'm a very strong proponent of the following disciplines, especially of holistic medicine. And those are chiropractic, homeopathy, naturopathy, acupuncture, and more. I mean, these should be everyone's first choice for health maintenance and illness prevention. Of course, we want to have doctors and surgeons. They perform a very useful, most necessary role, especially in crisis medicine. And I can speak for myself that last year, unfortunately, I had four surgeries. They were the types that were pretty much beyond my control. I'm well now, thank you very much, to allopathic medicine. That would be the more modern types of medicine with all their, you know, surgeries and pharmaceuticals, that sort of thing. And I'm basically against using any pharmaceuticals unless they accompany like surgery. I needed to take these things before and after some of my surgeries. These things I had to take. I understand that completely. And for pain. But I don't understand this concept. It's been referred to as an American concept as, well, here's a problem. You know, take a pill. There's a pill for everything. Come to find out also that something like, I think my numbers are correct, something like 90% of pharmaceuticals come from petroleum. So, you know, I'm thankful that there are painkillers and all this sort of thing, things that we need, especially for surgeries and you know, antibiotics. But as far as, you know, probably for diabetes and all these kind of things, I mean, people really need to look at their lifestyles and their diets. So my friend whom I'm expecting a call from is a naturopath. And I don't hand out compliments lightly, and I'm not trying to blow smoke up his butt, but he's one of the smartest people I know, and he's really enlightened me to a lot of things. And this friend of mine, he is not only a learned in naturopathy, holistic medicine, and integrated wellness, as he refers to it. Not only have I learned a lot from this man, but he also is a certified – he's learned and certified in acupuncture and Chinese medicine. Well, I've always embraced – those concepts, you know, I think it's wonderful. I think that other parts of the world have a lot to offer to Americans who are drunk on, so many of which aren't drunk on this concept of American exceptionalism, which I tend to laugh at. I'm proud and thankful to live here. I think we should do the best we can, but I'm not into this boastfulness of, you know, especially as messed up as the federal government has made things with the economy, with debt, the drug war, war overseas, all this, which continues to bankrupt our country. And those who would, you know, talk about this American exceptionalism, well, if there is such a thing, you know, let's lead by example through technology, invention, innovation, all of which America has no monopoly on, because let's face it, other parts of the world, and I've traveled a lot, I've been outside the country a lot, and I'm thankful that I've been able to do this. It really gives you an insight about how others think of America, how it's viewed, and you learn right away that there are very intelligent people, brilliant people, hardworking people from other countries who also innovate, invent, improve. One is Japan, which has been tragically, as we know, tragically hit by this awful earthquake. And I read somewhere where in spite of all this tragedy they're having, there's been no looting, which says a lot for the character of the Japanese people. I mean, they've been through a lot before, this awful, unnecessary bombing of Japan, the two atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, especially when the country was already defeated and seeking through channels, I believe, through Swedish diplomats to get a negotiated peace. They were already down. There was no need to do this to them. So I mean, they've survived that, and they'll survive this earthquake. Obviously, I'm concerned, as many of us are, about the their damaged their damaged nuclear facilities. But again, only science and technology is going to solve this problem. I hope they can get it fixed soon. Apparently, America has sent some specialist technicians, nuclear scientists and whatnot out there to help the Japanese, which is wonderful. But Japan, unlike our federal government here, will not, I'm sure, will not be idiotic enough to reject their help like the federal government did to Holland during the Gulf oil spill last spring, like the federal government treated Holland, probably Norway, other countries who had expertise. No, they didn't want them here. Plus, back to the unions again, unions standing in the way of these other workers coming over, even though they came from countries who have a lot of experience and a lot of wisdom in dealing with emergencies like this, with oil spills and whatnot. So, again, I've said this before. If I was in charge, if I was running the show last spring, I would have welcomed all foreign help from Saudi, from Canada, Mexico, Japan, any of these countries who have experience and equipment, diversified equipment in oil reclamation or pollution control. And I also would have welcomed the farmers. Bring all the hay and straw that you can to the coastline to help soak up this oil, as they did back in the 69 spill in Santa Barbara, as I recall. So, and I'm an idiot in math and science, but I know how to delegate. I could have assembled this great group of people who would have worked on this solution immediately. And I wouldn't think of turning away help from other countries, especially friendly countries like Holland or Saudi. So, you know, 2020 hindsight, perhaps, but that's what I would have done. And I'm no whiz in math or science, but I know how to delegate. And I know the absolute necessity and importance of those who are learned in math and science. And speaking of learned, I hope that I hear from my doctor friend soon. He's quite a character. He's a funny guy. He's got a great sense of humor. He's a compassionate fellow. He's conscientious. And he's an aspiring drummer, too, so which I think is very cool. And so he'll have some good things to tell us, I'm sure, about his take on holistic medicine and integrated wellness and the positive effects it has on our bodies and our health and our outlook. He's also a very fit guy, and I think he's here now. Are you out there, Dr. Beck?
Yes, how's it going?
It's going well. Welcome to Third Stream View.
Thank you very much. You know, it's kind of crazy to get a doctor to be on this late.
Yeah, well, it's not like you're a surgeon, so you won't be up tomorrow early doing surgery.
Oh, no, definitely not.
But I really thank you for I know I'm on this late time slot, and you're on the East Coast, obviously, because I'm at 9 o'clock in the Pacific, so I appreciate your giving some time and to share your wisdom and your humor with us. And I don't know if you've been listening in advance. I've been trying to give you the big build-up, so hopefully you'll continue that build-up.
Well, I'll try not to disappoint. How about that?
Yes, well, I'm sure you've said that to women, too, but that's another story.
Oh, heavens.
Yes, you see, so we're off to a good start already. But, no, I've been fan of yours. I met you, I still remember, I met you about spring of 2004, and I've been a fan of yours ever since. And you've helped me in the past, and I was sort of enthralled with your knowledge of Chinese medicine and acupuncture, the fact that you have all of that together. So obviously, sure. You know, you're a smart guy, but you've worked hard and you've earned what you have and where you are.
Yep, I would agree.
Good, because the meek shall inherit nothing. Frank Zappa. No guts, no glory. I mean, you busted your ass in medical school or wherever, all those schools you went to and your internships and this and that. And so if you would, please, tell us a little a bit about your discipline, which is naturopathy.
Right. Well, you know, I have two disciplines, of course. You know, one is naturopathy and the other one is oriental medicine. I was smart enough not to go into, becoming an MD or a murdering doctor. So, you know, I wanted to go more towards the actual nurturing doctor. So, I was wise enough to make that decision, I think.
Well, we're better off for it. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I'm a good old boy from North Carolina. I grew up in the South, single wide trailer, you know, chickens in the front yard kind of thing.
I love
and,
the South.
Yeah, me too. You know, we got rid of all the tobacco and everybody went to pork, so it's kind of stinky down there these days.
I love bacon.
Oh man, it's the good stuff. But you know, the thing about it is you know, I grew up, poor and non-affluential. And so we looked at things just a little bit differently, you know, and I had lots of family members with all kinds of these, you know, diseases and, you know, diagnoses. You know, a mom who has been a type 1 diabetic since she was 21 because she had a nasal infection that doctors treated with high-dose steroids, and it basically, killed her pancreas.
Ouch.
You know, so we you know, I started at an early age really seeing the negative impact of, you know, medicine like that. But, you know, that's not to say that it doesn't have its place. I had a ruptured, flexor tendon when I was a senior in high school. And, you know, thank goodness for, modern care and surgery and that kind of stuff for that. So I think there's a balanced exposure in my life.
Sorry, where is that tendon on the body? In the foot?
No, it was actually on my ring finger. We'll talk layman's term. Ring finger, right hand. And it was kind of funny because, you know, that's my intent of career was to I was getting my commission as an officer in the Navy, so I was going to fly jets, and that was my joystick hand. So when I ruptured that tendon that's on the inside of your hand that curls your fingers in towards your palm, that was kind of crazy. But it was a fantastic surgery, and it did wonderful things, and. You know, so my point is that there's certainly a place, you know, for what we call modern medicine these days.
Was that a sports injury?
Yes. Yes, it was. It was a sports injury.
Okay.
But, you know, the point I was making, you know, Fred, was that, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, there's a lot of, misunderstanding out there when it comes to my discipline. That a lot of people think that you know, us practitioners don't have a respect, love, or respect for, you know, conventional medicine. I think there's a lot to it that's very much needed, and I certainly abdicate that, you know, to it, you know, when it comes down to, you know, the need for that.
You know? I know you do because, thank you. We've discussed it. We've discussed this in the past, and you're very, and so is my chiropractor. There, you guys are very upfront about it. Yes, there's a place for it, and you'll be the first to tell us. However, their disciplines usually don't, or maybe they're starting to, but they'll seldom recommend, you know, the holistic view.
Oh, sure. You know, well, BK, it's really simple. Conventional medicine is acute care medicine. That's where they do an outstanding job. If you have an emergency or, you know, an injury and you go to that type of care, they're exceptional at stabilizing the patient and maintaining life. Where they, you know, where it falls short and where naturopathy in my field, which I actually practice called functional medicine as opposed to dysfunctional medicine, is when it comes to acute care. You just simply can't use what we do you know, and or what they do in conventional medicine, you know, acute care in chronic disease conditions.
Right.
It doesn't work on things like diabetes or long latency diseases like osteoporosis, you know, depression, fatigue, allergies, migraines, these kind of things that are of a chronic, long-standing nature. They use the exact same toolbox. The medications are one of the two tools that they actually offer, medication and surgery. And
yeah.
you can do that in an acute care case, but in chronic states of disharmony in the body, that just approach doesn't work well, and that's where they fail. So in my field, in the disciplines that I utilize, that's what's specifically different, is we use a dynamic approach to chronic disease resolution that doesn't include acute care methods.
Are you finding more acceptance generally, or a little more of a welcoming amongst MDs and the that crowd?
Oh, of course, you know, and I lecture to about 30,000 of them from around the world, you know, a couple times a year at the medical conferences, because they love data, you know, they always love the studies and the data, and they're just not aware of all the hundreds, if not thousands, depending upon what we're talking about, you know, amounts of data that's actually out there. I mean, they just stick to their specialties journal. So when I start talking about linking, you know, depression with, you know, gut dysbiosis or irritable bowel syndrome or migraines to allergies or food intolerances or gluten sensitivities, it just blows their mind. They take the skeptical view, but when you present them with information that's already there, it's pretty confounding. But then, of course, then they find themselves not being able to apply that because, you know, they're basically prostitutes to the pharmaceutical industry, you know.
Right.
They've been working for the pharmaceutical pimps, you know, since medical school. That's who pays for all their school. So they have to use that model. So even when presented with this data or the studies that absolutely substantiates the methods that we use, it's still difficult for them to implement it. But yes, they're receiving it as more valid these days. And make no mistake about it, one of the clarifications I always like to make is I'm not an alternative, quote unquote, medicine practitioner. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know you don't care for that title. I tend to mix it with holistic, but I know you don't care for that title or that term.
I mean, holistic is great as long as it's not holistic medicine. You know, there's a lot of people who do holistic medicine that, you know, try to give their patients or clients, you know, just a whole list of all these pills, potions, and powders to take, and that's certainly not the approach that we use either, you know.
Oh, yeah, I don't think of that at all. Right, yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned the AMA, I believe, or FD, the big pharmacology. Now, this is where I blend economics in this. I refer to this evil triangle as the AMA-FDA pharmaceutical monopoly enforced by government power.
Oh, of course. I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, there's a lot of, a lot of validity to that. That's basically what it is. You know, you have that model that's in place, you know.
Of course there's validity to it because I said it. Now, In addition to that, in a truly free libertarian society that respects individual rights, Doctor, you would still have a pharmaceutical industry, of course. You could have an AMA. However, they will not be able to use government force to restrict your right to practice medicine or my right to visit the doctors of my choice. That is where we have to draw the line. That's where it needs reform. We don't need more government control or ownership.
Sure.
You know, so I want to reform things. And I don't know if you ever got to – sorry, let me just read you one thing. I don't know if you got to ever see my secession solution that I've been pushing. But under the term of healthcare, my first paragraph – let me read this to you. This is something. Diet, nutrition, vitamins and mineral supplementation, exercise, and holistic medicine, primarily chiropractic, naturopathy, homeopathy, acupuncture, and more, should be everyone's first choice for health maintenance – and illness prevention.
Right.
Do you agree with that?
Oh, of course. But, you know, and here the thing is, you know, but do you feel that it is their first choice, or are you saying it should be?
I'm saying that's the paradigm. That's how it should be. If I had the bully pulpit, there's only two things I would say that I know are best for mankind. The paragraph I just read and a truly free market economy where there's no barriers to market entry, and that big sure. business or other businessmen cannot use the force of government to exclude naturopathy or chiropractic or acupuncture or my alternative cancer clinic that I, as an adult, choose to visit. I don't want them in my way.
Right. Well, you know, I take it a little step further, and this is where, you know, it might seem, you know, radically different thought, and hopefully some light bulbs will go off. Well, the thing is people already have that power. See, what they do is they basically are bastardizing themselves out. You know, they're giving their power of attorney to this system because they're not making correct choices in their life.
Correct.
When it comes to their environmental inputs, you know, their exercise habits or not, their eating habits, things like that. You know, because quite frankly, you know, every single one, you know, we have a big manual that codes them, of course, gives them a real fancy number. It can be linked to a nutritional deficiency, every single one of them. And so, you know, at the end of the day, what's happening is people are digging their graves with their teeth, is what I say. Wow. And what we have to do is take that personal responsibility. But see, it's what doctors are doing is you know, inviting you to play the name it, blame it, tame it game. Right? If they can give it a disease, they can blame it, and then they can tame it. So it's basically they set the buying criteria. You know, they tell a patient, oh, you have, you know, chronic fatigue syndrome. It's really, you know, it's a syndrome. It's a checklist of symptoms. If you have, you know, 6 out of the 12, then you qualify. And so then people talk to me, oh, it's my chronic fatigue syndrome, like it's a pet, like it's something that we keep around the house and we can actually see, or it's my fibromyalgia, it's my fibro. They even give it a cute little short-term name.
Right.
And what they're not realizing is that those quote-unquote diseases are caused, you know, primarily by things that are 100% mediatable by that very patient. They can do a lot to change that by, you know, making sure that they're eating correctly, that they're, reducing toxins in their environment and their consumption, that they're balancing their hormones, that they're exercising, that they're very simple tools that can avert getting this name disease that they now get to blame, and then they tell you how to correct it, and you have to take these fancy meds, but in order to do these, you need to pay this insurance premium.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right.
So that's what happens is they can scare you about the disease that it's just because it's in your genes, there's nothing you can do about it. And so then they own, you know, the buying criteria. They tell the patient, this is where it comes from. And then you have to see us to treat it, and this is how we're going to do it. But to cover our care, we need you to pay a monthly fee. And then those monthly fees of insurance companies, most people don't know that insurance companies are just investment companies. They take that money, and then they invest it in the pharmaceutical industry. And then the pharmaceutical industry then pays for the schools that teaches the buying criteria. And so it's a really nice, I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine, and we'll all get fat and rich.
Wow, I didn't know that. Now, I knew insurance companies have to invest. I didn't realize they invested that much in pharmaceuticals.
Well, of course.
Wow.
If you were into growing, corn, you know, for an industry, for plastics, you know, wouldn't you invest, you know, in both a fertilizer company and a plastics manufacturer? I mean, it just only makes sense.
I don't know that I would invest in. I know I would be buying from them. But yeah,
well,
so
same difference. I mean, we investing is not just monetary. It's influence, it's networking, it's rubbing elbows, it's social events. You'd be surprised the inner workings of people and how many things, you know, go on for that. But, you know, I try not to focus on that. You know, my message to patients is if you truly want to take what you would call, you know, this, you know, libertarian thing, because I'm all for patient liberty, they have to stop, you know, prostituting themselves to doctors that are trained with this specific method.
Right.
And where they can regain their control is by making dynamic changes in their lifestyle. Dynamic. Not just accepting the fact that that they have to have this disease because it runs in the family. It's the biggest crock of crap you'd ever believe.
Now, I heard you say that before. Heart issues or any cancers that run in families, that's you think that's irrelevant to people?
No, I mean listen, I do a subspecialty in my field is genomics, specifically what we call nutrigenomics, and I actually, as one of the tests that I offer my patients, is we actually take a DNA sample. And, due to the Human Genome Project, we've mapped them out. We know certain genes, will make us have a higher propensity to a disease. But again, it's just like a bomb. A bomb's not going to go off until you smack the tip real hard.
Right.
Does that make sense? Bullets don't just go off unless they're heated or struck by a gun. So even if you do have this gene, the gene has to have expression. And the expression of that gene comes from nutritional messengers, believe it or not.
It's lifestyle related.
That's absolutely right. So yeah, it runs in the family, but what's funny is we tend to do how we grew up. Where I come from, we eat a certain way. This weekend I made a nice North Carolina pork barbecue. Okay.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, well, that's how it goes. Rain check. But the thing about it is so we eat a certain way and we act a certain way as we grew up, and then we manifest that in our lives. So that's why things run in the family, because we tend to do what we do. Okay? That's it.
It's
not just because of the genes.
Thank you. About 3 years ago, my chiropractor told me that about every sixth commercial is a pharmaceutical commercial.
Oh, sure.
And yeah. I knew there were a lot of them. I never gauged it, but he said approximately, he's not writing this in stone, but then I started, thinking about it more. And as I watch TV, I don't watch a lot, but when I do watch it, I do see quite a bit of pharmaceutical commercials. And then I love the way they speak really quickly after the side effects, after the commercial, they speak the side effects very quickly. If you diarrhea,
oh, sure.
Why would you even take this stuff?
Exactly. And, I have an 11-year-old little girl who does the same thing. Matter of fact, she had a headache, and her school, she calls me and, hey, can she take an aspirin? Or it was a Tylenol or something. And she called me, and she got on the phone, and she goes, Dad, my head hurts, but they want to give me this medication. I looked at the bottle, and I don't like these side effects. My 11-year-old little girl had the wherewithal to actually look at the bottle. And I mean, it was just acetaminophen, and I was okay with it. But because it was just, acetaminophen is actually, it's a toxin. That's actually one of the, medications we give to test liver clearance or liver function is actually give them a dose, Tylenol, if you will. And then collect their pee and see how well their liver detoxes it. But, we can give a toxin to help, relieve a symptom, and that's okay in acute care. But to take it for chronic, states, that's just not a good thing.
Well, I threw away all my Tylenol because I heard that it's, it's tough on the liver.
It's very tough on the liver. It's highly toxic. But so is an herb that we use called chaparral. So there's a lot of plants that are toxic, that we've even used for chemotherapy. Like one of the chemotherapy drugs that we use used to come from the Pacific yew tree bark, and aspirin, came from white willow bark. So they are toxins, even though they're plant derived.
Sure, sure.
But it's okay to have that toxin, your body can clear it. But so I try to tell people, don't be so anti-drug, when it comes to acute care. When it comes to chronic states, that's ridiculous. When I see, Sally Fields telling people to take Boniva to save their bones, I could just puke on the carpet. It's the silliest thing ever.
I laugh at those commercials. I have a question about aspirin.
Okay.
Is there any validity to this talk about, take an aspirin a day, or if you sense a heart attack coming on, take an aspirin? Any validity to that?
Well, when it comes to, as far as when you feel it, well, yes, to a degree, it just depends. Number one, that's the other problem that faces, you know, conventional medicine today is this cookie cutter medicine. It doesn't matter who you are, you're a symptom, and you're going to get the exact same medication for what you complain as the guy before you. Absolutely irrespective of your whole, you know, patient story. They're not interested in that. Remember, it's the name it, blame it, same thing. What's that?
It's one shoe fits all. One shoe fits all. Are you still there? Your phone was breaking up a bit. I think we've just lost the doc temporarily. Hopefully he'll call back. So as you can see, folks, we've covered some interesting things here about pharmaceuticals and how they're prescribed, overprescribed, and he's back. Just the mindset that a lot of doctors have. I hope that's not the AMA or the what I call the evil AMA FDA pharmaceutical triangle trying to curtail our discussion.
they're tapping in. I'm not so worried about that. Well, what I was going to tell you about the aspirin question is that yes, it can be beneficial, but there is specific testing to determine if you are a candidate for ASA dosing or not. You see, that's the trouble. A lot of patients don't know that because why? Insurance doesn't cover the test.
What is ASA?
Acetyl salicylic acid. That's aspirin.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Acetyl salicylic acid. So ASA or aspirin, we'll call it. It does have, you know, of course, a blood thinning and an anticoagulant type effect. Okay, but that medication's method of action is determinant upon a certain chemistry and gene in the patient.
Right.
And so it doesn't work for everyone.
So
that needs to be determined. But to answer your second question, no, you can't take an aspirin in the midst of a heart attack and have it.
Right.
It's too late by then. Now, what you can do, though, is you can use cayenne pepper.
I've heard about that.
That will do it.
To inhale some, you mean?
No, just drop it straight into the mouth.
Oh, really?
Yes,
wow.
Sir.
Well, I can see where that's powerful stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But again, most people don't have that opportunity or time. So again, we also have to be realistic, you know?
I've got some in my cabinet at home.
Well, of course. But if you're starting to have, you know, an acute myocardial infarct, you need to dial 911. You don't need to be going and reaching for the cayenne first.
Right.
So if you can make it for that, well, then that's the case. I mean, we got to be realistic here.
Speaking of realistic, let me ask you, because I have just a couple of medical problems to ask you. Not I don't have, but these are questions I have, I think, of some friends of mine. A friend of mine has epileptic seizures. He's about 40. He's probably had them 10 or 15 years, and they got him on a lot of meds.
Okay.
And, you know, he still gets them. Some are worse than others. And I'm wondering if what your profession can do, or can you do much after a person's been taking all these meds for so many years?
Well, of course. The first thing is okay, like if someone has epileptic seizures, okay, that's we already start to give it a name. And see, I don't practice a symptoms medicine. I practice systems medicine. That's what functional medicine is. So
right.
I'm not going to treat seizures. That's what pharmaceutical medications do that are for seizures is they actually treat the seizure. They're trying to use an acute molecule to treat an acute problem. What I begin to do immediately is go, I want to know the patient. I want to know what that whole patient's story is. What is actually at the root cause of causing these seizures? Seizures could be caused by a fatty acid imbalance. Seizures could be caused by a B12 deficiency. Seizures could be caused by a parasitic infection in the brain. Parasites can do all kinds of things in the body when it comes to that. That's a little known, you know, problem. The other thing is, you know, seizures could be caused by, you know, exposure to, you know, pesticides. It could be caused by heavy metals. Seizures can be caused by vaccines. I know that's a big topic for you. So you know, we have to find out before we start talking about seizures. You know, I know that I can help all systems of the body. So yes, I can help that patient. And the body, when you give it what it's missing and you remove what's impeding its function, it spontaneously heals itself. That's the beautiful thing about it.
What do you think about this?
Bodies are very resilient.
What do you think about this? I just got a memo here from my producer. He's been listening, and he says, I kicked my thyroid medication with the selenium in Brazil nuts.
Well, absolutely. Now, isn't that funny? You know, so, a lot of people,
excuse me. He says the downside is that the nuts are more expensive. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Well, you know, there's a better way to go about that. But that's fantastic. I hope he's not just being sarcastic, because that's a true statement.
It doesn't look like BS. No, he's serious. He's
okay.
He's
very, saying, very no, good. It's not. Well, a huge high five virtually. So you know, that's exactly what I try to teach people, is that the thyroid making its hormone is, you know, it's like, you know, I say, you know, the old joke, you know, how do you make a hormone, right? You know, don't pair. Well, you know, but the thing is to make our hormones, you have to pay them. Okay, you have to give them the nutrients they need. And a lot of people are on Synthroid, you know, because they come in with symptoms like I have fatigue, my hair is falling out, cold hands, cold feet, you know, insomnia, you know, dry skin, lethargy, weight gain. So they do a little test and they take a look at a hormone in your brain called TSH, right? Thyroid stimulating hormone. And if that's above 5, they say, oh, you need thyroid medication.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the problem there is it's not necessarily that you need more thyroid. You just need to be able to convert it. And that's interesting. They said about selenium is because your thyroid makes a hormone called T4. But in order for it to act on the body's, nucleus within your cells and the different body parts, it needs to be converted to something called T3. That conversion of that one molecule hormone to its active component is selenium dependent. It acts on an enzyme, that actually will, make that, hormone active. So, yes, you can start eating selenium, and, you know, and it makes your thyroid work better.
Interesting.
It all comes down to food.
I eat a lot of nuts. I eat a lot of nuts every day. I eat pecans, pistachios, walnuts, and almonds, and I mix them with fruit. So nuts are a very good part of the diet, aren't they?
Fantastic. Absolutely mandatory. Now, when I talk about nuts, you know, I'm not just talking about you, PK. I'm talking, you know, I make sure people understand the first thing. I'm just taking after you.
Thank
the
you.
Thing is, you know, peanuts are not nuts. So I want to make that caveat. All right. Peanuts are technically legumes, and they're from a different part of a plant. So nuts, what I'm talking about, the reproductive organs of trees. So when I talk about nuts, I'm saying, yes, all those ones that you listed there. But to some of the listeners, the most common and popular nut is peanuts, and I don't mean peanuts.
Right. Yeah, I don't really care for them, but I do like the way that the Thai people use them in their cooking. My question was about are nuts also good fiber?
Yep, they're fantastic minerals, fiber, and essential fats.
Great. Okay, two more topics for as far as your naturopathic discipline in treating this. What about MS? Multiple sclerosis.
Let me clarify something first. You know, my professional training is in naturopathy, but even naturopathy approaches things differently. So I always like to make sure that we come back to the term of my field of practice called functional medicine.
Functional medicine.
Functional medicine. Okay. So in functional medicines, were you talking about MS?
Yes.
Okay. See, again, MS is the name disease. And again, we get lost in what MS is in the perception of people who've been stamped with that diagnosis on the forehead. I don't treat MS. I treat patients. I treat people. I don't divide them down, you know, and truncate them into specific symptoms. That's
correct.
Not what I'm interested in. So when we talk about MS, what part of MS? In other words, you know, what system in its this disease, you know, category is manifesting? You know, symptoms of MS are generally neurological and muscular.
Right.
I've known patients who have, you know, later on in their lives, come to, MS diagnoses. And it's been something so simple as a B12 deficiency. And the B12 deficiency was induced by loss of blood to a previous injury surgery. And a lot of people don't realize that general anesthesia, like when they use nitrous oxide or in the dentist, it literally shuts down B12 function in the body, literally turns it off.
Oh, boy.
And so you can have another part of the patient's history, unbeknownst to their caregiver, as the real root cause of why they're having these symptoms affecting their system. So they still give it the diagnosis and still give it the exact same pharmaceutical, treatment. So, yes, MS can be resolved.
Is there anything
MS is curable?
As far as MS, are there any things in general that you look for in the patient's diet or consumption or history? Are there any general factors that are red flags to you for MS?
Yes, and I do some functional assessments. One of them, the first thing I do is I do a urine test that's called a metabolic analysis. We take a look at organic acids in the urine, and I test for a chemical called methylmalonic acid. Okay. Methylmalonic acid, or MMA, is a compound that the body secretes as a byproduct of B12 metabolism. So if that organic acid is high in the patient's urine, I know specifically if they have a B12 deficiency. Now, does that make sense?
Yes, it's back to that B12 again.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the first thing. I mean, multiple sclerosis, or MS, is basically a demyelination, of nerves. Right. So that nerve, think of it as, as a cord. Right. And your cat chews on it and puts little holes in it. Right. And then, of course, over time, it doesn't work or it fries or it has a malfunction. Same thing with your nerves. But we have to ask, why is that myelin sheath, that coating on the nerves, why is it demyelinating? What's demyelinating it? Are we missing the B12 that's associated with it, or the fatty acids like choline or acetylcholine that we actually get from nuts, by the way? Is that missing from the diet? Is the supply side economics off? Does that make sense?
I see. Very interesting.
So we have to do assessments. We have to look at the patient from a systems point of view, not a symptoms point of view.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And that's why they call it autoimmune. MS is being autoimmune.
Right.
In other words, your own immune system's attacking it. Well, why? PK, if it was hunting season, deer season, and you're prancing around out in the forest, in a deer outfit, you just might get shot.
Right.
Okay, so if your body has a certain missing chemical or an agent of, like a heavy metal or a parasite or a microbe, okay, the body's going to attack it. You have to ask yourself, why is the body attacking itself? Not just, it's attacking itself, let's suppress it. Does that make sense?
Right. If you, let me have sort of a diverging question here. If you suddenly, if you decided to go to medical school, let's say, at this point in your life, would you have a hard time dealing with what you're being taught?
No, not at all. But there's no need for me to ever do that. I mean, I just practice a different field.
Would you find yourself going crazy, but with some of the messages they'd be giving you about, drugs and pharmaceuticals, would that just drive you crazy?
No, not anymore. I'll be 39 years old in a month, and I'm grounded. I went through, the stages of grief, First thing is denial, right? And I'm like, no, it's not really happening,
Yeah.
And then I got angry about it, And then I got to the displacency side, and now I'm comfortable with it. Listen, we all have a story to tell. And the beautiful thing is that we have, you know, we have programs like this where people can share thoughts. We have social networking, and the dissemination of information and the availableness of it really thwarts a lot of that ignorance. It's just right. Patients need to take an absolute commanding role in their own health, and don't believe it just because they tell it. Same thing like with me. I tell my patients, listen, I work for you. You can fire me at any time. And that's the point of view you should have with anybody that you go that wears a lab coat and stethoscope. Okay?
Right.
But don't believe them just because they told you. I mean, I'm young, clean cut, enthusiastic, and healthy. Don't believe me just because, you know, I'm exciting. Go do your own research. Check my math. I challenge you to do it. You know, open up your mind and do it that way. So, it wouldn't frustrate me at all because I'm already there.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't conjecture for me anymore. I mean, I've resolved these named diseases thousands upon thousands of times and seen miracle after miracle happen before my very eyes. And it wasn't because of me. It was because I had a compliant patient, someone who was willing to take the steps of the journey and take command of their own health.
When you lead that horse to the water, he's got to drink.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know, people have the biggest control in their lives. They just got to revoke that power of attorney that they've given. It's their own fault. It's their own fault.
Let me ask you.
They don't want to do it.
Thank you. Let me ask you another thing that's pertinent for a lot of us males, especially, is this whole prostate cancer thing. I've heard that most men will eventually get it anyway. And is that true in third world countries too, or is that more like America, Western Europe, or?
Okay. Well, again, what I'm going to do is I'm going to divert off the term prostate cancer. And I'm going to talk about, a misfire or an incorrect programming, right, of a DNA within a cell that's in a male organ called the prostate. Prostate cancer, specifically, has a certain characteristic to it, okay? And in certain organs, there is an affinity for certain pathogens of disease, be it petrochemicals, be it heavy metals, be it microbes, okay? And, when the prostate, is affected by what I call, one of my five causes of all disease, it's going to manifest there for men, just like in women, it's breast cancer.
Right.
Women have ovarian cancer. You know, we don't have ovaries, so we don't get ovarian cancer. So my point is that in this country, we have a certain chemical burden and toxicity of exposure that is affecting men and their prostates.
Is this less prevalent in other countries?
Of course it is.
Or certain other countries?
Mm-hmm. Of course it is.
Well, there's probably
data or statistics off of that, but I do know that we do have a higher rate here. Sure.
Wow, what was your? You mentioned those five things. Five things about diseases or five? What were those things you mentioned?
Well, first of all, you could have when it comes down to it, a nutritional deficiency. Okay, you have a disease like hypothyroid, right? That's the disease, right? But fatigue is not a disease. It's a symptom, but it has its own medical code, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the thing about it is you have to take a look. Is it a nutritional deficiency?
So right? Okay, so that's you mentioned five of them. That's the first, nutritional deficiency.
Yeah.
What's the second one?
I'm gonna give you some other ones. Another
because I'm getting short on time. Okay.
Oh, no worries. Another cause of disease can be heavy metals.
I don't like that music anyway.
Toxins, right. So we said the first one is nutritional. The second one are toxins. It could be biological, elemental, or synthetic. Third cause could be microbes. That means bacteria, fungus, viruses, or parasites. Fourth,
right.
It can be an allergen. Molds, pollen, animal products, and five is stress, psychological or physical. So basically, okay. Toxins, nutritional, microbes, allergens, and stress. Those are the five causes of every disease. Either one or a combination of any of those five. So what I do is you know, I've developed a system to implement for my patients. You know, my trademark system is called the Balance Protocol. And so ultimately, you know, all conditions, these what we call ICD-9 diseases, can be viewed through this prism. There's two questions, five causes, and eight, you know, physiological systems that I treat. So the first question is, does this patient need to remove something? Toxins, microbes, stress, or, you know, poor eating. Question number two, does this person have some unmet need that needs to be filled? Nutrients, hormones, or thoughts, right? So, and then we talk about those five causes, and then we support eight systems, what we call their environmental inputs. Those are the things that we're exposed to in our environment and how we eat. Number two, gastrointestinal and digestion. We support that system. Number three, the mind and spirit. We make sure that patients, you know, are working in, you know, exercising their mind, praying, meditation, things like that.
Reading?
Number four is we, absolutely. You have to get the brain strong. It's very, very important.
You know, I read a lot. The brain is a muscle that needs exercise.
Absolutely. Number four is the immune system and calming inflammation in the body, the inflammatory cascades, right? You know, the fifth thing is hormones and neurotransmitters, right? Number six is what we call energy production or mitochondrial oxidation. Number seven is the structural systems of the body. This is where chiropractic and exercise and manipulation comes into play. And eight is detoxification and biotransformation. So those eight systems is what I support with every single patient I see based upon their specific story.
Asking
the two questions and looking at the five diseases. So that's the, you know, and like, we just don't want to truncate their symptoms into this, you know, name it, blame it, tame it. I practice linking and thinking. That's what I call it, linking and thinking. How does, you know, depression relate to the bowel? A lot of people, that, for example, they don't know, a lot of women, they don't move their bowels. You know, they think it's unladylike if I have to poop two or three times a day, but yet they're moms, you know, and they know they feed their babies, and you feed a baby and it poops. You feed, they poop. They feed, they poop. We're supposed to do the same thing, not eat three times a day and poop every other day. That just doesn't make sense.
What was your thing about blame it, name it? How does that go? That's kind of funny. How do you term that?
If you name it, you can blame it, and then you can tame it.
Tame it, okay.
Name it, blame it, tame it. Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you something about detoxing and like heavy metals. Is it true that like blueberries or berries are some of the best things you can eat for this sort of stuff?
Well, no. No? I love blueberries. I love blueberries. And yes, blueberries have a detox. Yeah, that's great, and that's a good way to do it. But if your exposure exceeds, you know, in other words, what's being taken away is exceeding what's being supplied, it's not going to be enough. So there does come a time where you're going to need, you know, therapeutic dosing of other agents that are going to help the body detoxify. And in different organs, they apply to different things. Blueberries are not systemic detoxifiers. They're very good detoxifiers of the blood. It's what we call an alternative, herb, blueberry. But it doesn't really, doesn't detox the liver as powerful as some other botanicals would.
Right. Well, listen, I'm running out of time here, but I would sure like to thank you for allowing us your time and your wisdom. And I learned a lot more. I always learn a lot when I'm in your company. And you're the kind of person that, and I'm not just blowing smoke up your butt, because I'm sure you have plenty of smoke up there already. But thank you. You're a likable guy from the get go when I met you, and when I went, you know, your bedside manner.
All right.
You know, your professionalism, but you're conscientious. You're funny. You make patients. You make them feel at ease. You know, you have this.
Well, I'm a patient too, and see, I work for them. We need to get back to earth. Well, hey, you know, on that funny note, do you know where blowing smoke up someone's butt comes from?
You know, I think you may have told me this, but I forget. I'm sorry.
It actually used to be an accepted and common medical practice to actually blow smoke into the rectum.
Wow.
It's and so true. Sure, no, they used to make these little apparatuses that it was part of it, just like bloodletting and things like that. So it's kind of interesting and very, very ironic that, you know, we still get smoke blown up our butts all the time by all these things that we're exposed to from conventional medicine, you know. But, you know, I really appreciate you having me on and stuff like that. It's really, really great. If people want more information, you know, can I give them a couple of sites to take a look at?
Sure, please do.
Well, the first one is functionalmedicine.org. Great site. That, you know, there's a lot of practitioners like me out there that practice what I do. The second thing is my site is going to launch here in the next week or two, which is Dr. Dr. Anthony G. Beck. Yep, I'm a Glenn Beck, too. That's my middle name. But
you're smart,
Dr. Anthony G. Yeah. No, he's a great guy. He's another good Mormon boy. So Dr. Anthony G. Beck.com. So that's going to have all my video blogs, a lot of this information, all the systems on there. They'll have access to, you know, pharmaceutical-grade nutraceuticals. They'll have access to me and things like that. So I'm really excited about that launching because I've had enough patients say, you need to, you know, put that stuff out there for more people. So.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you again so much for being on Third Stream View. I hope you'll come back again before too long.
Anytime you invite me.
I love hearing what you have to say, and your whole the whole way you say it is very easy, you know, easy to listen to, and you have a lot of knowledge and wisdom in there. So, thank you very much again. I'm going to say goodbye for now, and I'm going to say goodbye to all our listeners, and thank you for listening into Third Stream View. And I'll see you back here again next Monday evening, 9 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Central. And 12 a.m. Eastern. I'm your host, PK, saying good night for now. Thank you, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.